This is the Kilt Father, Mark Gunn, and you're listening to the Secret Fire Podcast.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting from the last homely house in Rivendell, Middle Earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 19. I'm Michael.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Micah.
On this episode, we meet Wee-Lad Gimli's dear old dad, Gloin, Elrond Half-Elven, and more as we continue Many Meetings in Book 2, Chapter 1. Many meetings, and we invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire each week here on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Let me guess, that intro was no good.
Why?
Because I used many meetings twice and thought that was funny.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Pretty punny.
2 weeks in a row in the house of Elrond, where there is rest, where there is comfort, where there is healing.
Or there's a long-lost friend.
And the long-lost friend. Well, we met Gandalf last week, and that was a great relief, a great anxiety relief to Frodo, who had been looking for Gandalf intently for quite a while. And finally, he wakes up to Gandalf's voice. I love The Last Homely House. I mean, listen to the music.
Is that Gandalf's voice?
Yeah, there he is.
Man, what a beautiful soprano.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Michael, what were you saying?
Did you have anything to share before we jump into it?
No.
Let's do it. Give us back us up a little bit, Brendan, and let's get a running start.
Okay. So we last left off. Yes, Frodo has been talking to Gandalf. They've been catching up. Dear Bilbo. Oh, and that's the last thing. Gandalf, he tells Frodo that, well, there are many reasons why they should, and that is, you know, treat you as honored guests, as great lords. There's many reasons why they should, said Gandalf, smiling. I am one good reason, and the ring is another. You are the ring bearer, and you are heir to Bilbo, the ring finder. Dear Bilbo, Frodo said sleepily. I wonder where he is. I wish he were here. I wish he could hear all about it. It would have made him laugh. The cow jumped over the moon, and the poor old troll. With that, he fell fast asleep. Now Frodo was now in the safe. Was now safe in the last homely house, east of the sea. That house was, as Bilbo had long ago reported, quote, a perfect house. Whether you like food, or sleep, or storytelling, or singing, or just sitting and thinking best, or a pleasant mixture of them all. Merely to be there was a cure for weariness, fear, and sadness.
So remember, it has not just been Strider encouraging the hobbits, the fellowship, this group, not merely Strider encouraging him with the words, persevere, because in that house is comfort. Frodo had already known about this home. Why? Because Bilbo had told him. That's another important aspect of storytelling, isn't it? That's another purpose of storytelling. That's another purpose of reciting the same story over and over again. You know what I heard sometime this past week, Brendan? And I don't know where I heard it. It was actually in olden times when you had the bards and you had the minstrels. It was considered poor form to tell a story that nobody was familiar with. Isn't that interesting?
And yet, look where we are now.
Well, you build on
you
build on these common stories because those are a binding agent for culture and for peoples and for families and for communities.
Yeah.
Right? So Frodo had heard all about it for many years because Bilbo could not stop talking about it.
Right.
Come here, Frodo, my lad. Let me tell you again. And Sam was always there too, because Sam loved to. It was Bilbo who taught Sam his letters.
Yeah.
So It's just that community. I just like to point that out.
And just to add on top of that, to agree and add, let's see, it was a couple weeks ago, or maybe 3 weeks, some time ago.
In the not too distant past.
Yes. One of the things that the speaker at North Boulevard, the church that I now go to, something that he said about witnessing.
David Young, Mr. David Young.
No, it wasn't David.
Oh, okay.
He was away that week. It was Tony Holt, I think is his name. Anyway, he was talking about one of the classes that I was going to start up, Every Believer a Witness. And, it's fine and whatever. But he said something about witnessing that has stuck with me ever since. And he basically defined witnessing as one beggar telling another beggar where the food is.
Amen.
And I feel like not only does that go with what you're saying about storytelling, is that it creates this longing within the audience, or it's supposed to. Good storytelling is supposed to create that longing. So when Bilbo tells Frodo about this magical place, the last homely house on the left, is that what it was? that's just what I automatically think of. Sorry.
Or east of the sea.
Of the sea. The last homely house east of the sea.
Last homely house on the left.
Yeah, sorry. Oh. That was a faux pas on my part. Unintentional faux pas.
Last haunted house on the left.
On the east of the
last
sea.
Last haunted homely house
east of the sea.
On the left.
At the end of the world's end. Anyway.
Stop having fun. This
anyway,
is serious.
Bilbo is trying to, for one, he's telling Frodo where the food is. He's telling him
where
the goodies are, exactly. And again, just to bolster the point, I mean, that's what witnessing should be. You know, you've seen something. I've experienced something. I want to pour into you what I know about it and tell you about
You share it.
So yeah.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, I can imagine Bilbo telling Frodo, I hope one day, Frodo, my lad, I hope one day that you can look upon the tables at Elrond's house, right? And that's what Strider has been. I can't focus on that too much.
Trudging along.
Because that is uplifting. That is encouraging. That is edifying one another. That is provoking one another to faith and good works, right?
Yes.
So,
as the evening drew on.
And we are on page 225.
Yes.
Of The Lord of the Rings.
As the evening drew on, Frodo woke up again. And he found... Yes. And he found himself that he no longer felt in need of rest or sleep, but had a mind for food and drink and probably for singing and storytelling afterward.
Mm.
He got out of bed, but... Oh, that's to read the same line. He got out of bed and discovered that his arm was already nearly as useful again as it ever had been. He found laid ready clean garments of green cloth that fitted him excellently. Looking in a mirror, he was startled to see a much thinner reflection of himself than he remembered. It looked remarkably like the young nephew of Bilbo, who used to go tramping with his uncle in the Shire. But the eyes looked out at him thoughtfully.
Huh.
Yes, you have seen a thing or two since you last peeped out of the looking glass, he said to his reflection. But now, for a merry meeting. He stretched out his arms and whistled a tune. I like how Tolkien takes these moments to go inside. We talked about it last time with Gandalf talking, muttering something to himself. And here we get it again with Frodo having the scene where he's in the room by himself. Gandalf has just left. And he takes this moment to reflect, literally and physically.
And you can see you can feel the emotions. You can experience those as Frodo is.
Yeah, and then not only that, but just that what he sees is a thinner version of himself, and he can recognize that. How long has it been since he's looked in a mirror?
Yeah,
it's just cool
has transpired since the last time.
Yeah.
He gazed into a looking glass.
Oh yeah, he's resetting. Oh, and look who comes in.
Who?
Good old Sam.
Yes.
Good old Sam. Sam comes in. He wants to get him ready for the party. I am ready, said Frodo. Let's go and look for the rest of the party. The rest of the party, meaning Merry and Pippin. I can take you to them, sir, said Sam. It's a big house, this, and very peculiar. Always a bit more to discover and no knowing what you'll find around a corner. and the elves, sir. Sam gets his elves. The elves, sir. Elves here and elves there. Some are like kings. Some like kings, terrible and splendid, and some as merry as children. And the music and the singing, not that I have had the time or the heart to, for much listening since we got here, but I'm getting to know some of the ways of the place.
Oh, he has, as in the past 4 days...
He's already been exploring.
He has been exploring. He saw Gilda Radner and his merry band of elves, right? long ago, in the Shire.
Yes.
And he has met Glorfindel, but now he is in their element, and these elves here and elves there, some like kings, terrible and splendid, and some as merry as children, and the music and the singing. This is a good time. We haven't had a song in a while, guys. Let's listen to one of my very favorite Hobbity albums.
Oh, buddy.
In fact, it's Don't Go Drinking with Hobbits by Mark Gunn. This is all about elves, and here's Sam singing you a nice little tune.
Our friends in most the races now, hobbits, dwarves, and men. And with them all, as I recall, can share a smoke or grin. But this one group of beings I can't quite figure out. I always make a fool of me whenever elves about. It's not that they're unfriendly, they treat me like a child. They're just so otherworldly, distant, free, and wild. They tower there above me, like moonlight come to skin. Their eyes glittering like diamonds, so pale and cold and thin. They whisper jokes in Elvish and laugh over my head. They make me feel so foolish, I wish that I were dead. But when it comes to courage, no finer can be found. And they're the best beside you when trouble's sniffing round. Quite a wondrous street, but I'd rather be a hobbit from head to furry feet. Yes, I'd rather be a hobbit from head to furry feet.
Mr. Mark Gunn, half of the Brobdingnagian Bards, by the way, but that was off the album Don't Go Drinking with Hobbits, a fantastic hobbity album. You can find that everywhere, but get over to markgunn.com and you can get all of his stuff and tell him that we sent you and that we said hello. He's a great guy. Yes, Sam loves these elves, and it's really illustrated in this song that we just heard, the difference between hobbit folk and elven folk.
Yes, yeah.
But I'd rather be a hobbit from head to furry feet. And I'm with Sam. What about you, Micah?
I'm with the elves.
Oh!
I like hobbits. They're good, but...
I love hobbits.
I'm still figuring out where I identify in Middle-earth.
I think you're a hobbit, too.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Sometimes I feel like a dwarf.
Oh, really? It's kind of surly and...
Yeah. Well, arrogant.
Oh,
thick-headed.
Okay. Thick-headed. We're gonna meet a dwarf here. That is,
we are.
That is both of those things.
This is a dwarf that has also been through a lot.
I hope he's wise.
Hey, but first, let me back.
Maybe this episode.
Let me back up just a second, though. Just a little bit further up from where I started the last one. When Sam busts in through the door, Frodo's first thing he says is, "Hello, Sam."
Yes.
But Sam's first thing that he says is, "It's warm." What?
Yes.
It's warm, meaning your hand, Mr. Frodo. It felt so cold through the long nights, because Sam was right there by his side.
Yes.
I just think that's awesome.
Amen.
But getting back down, further down, Sam led him along several passages and down many steps and out into the high garden above the steep bank of the river. He found his friends sitting in a porch on the side of the house looking east. Michael, what's east? The Shire.
Yes.
Just want to point that out. Shadows.
Nope. Sorry. No,
they're looking east. Yeah, the Shire's to the east.
No, it's to the west.
Wait. Dang it. Oh, man. I thought I was so smart.
But the sunrise is in the east, so you could say that. Say, Michael, what's in the east?
Hey, Michael, what's in the east?
The sunrise.
Michael, what's in the east?
The sunrise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, I thought I was so
Shire's
clever.
In the east. I see it.
No, the Shire's to the west.
Shire's to the west of Rivendell.
Yeah, that's west.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Oh, true. Yeah. I had... Okay.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, the west. Yeah.
Remember, west and east, it reads we.
Yes, yes, Michael.
Okay.
I know. I feel so foolish right now. Shadows had fallen in the valley below, but there was still a light on the faces of the mountains far above. The air was warm. The sound of running water was loud. Running and falling water was loud. And the evening was filled with a faint scent of trees and flowers, as if summer still lingered in Elrond's gardens.
Now remember, we're October 24th.
Mm-hmm. They're still talking about summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is well into... Fall. Nearing winter. But in this place...
No, we're fall. The winter is just a couple of days before Christmas.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay, Michael.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's just true.
I know. Okay. Hooray, cried Pippin, springing up. Here is our noble cousin. Make way for Frodo, Lord of the Ring. Hush, said Gandalf from the shadows at the back of the porch. Why does Gandalf just... watch things from afar. Evil things do not come.
Because he's a star. From afar.
Stop. Get out of here. Evil things do not come into this valley.
Jamie Farr.
But all the same, we should not name them. The Lord of the Ring is not Frodo, but the master of the Dark Tower of Mordor, whose power is again stretching out over the world. We are sitting in a fortress, but outside it is getting dark. Oh, Gandalf's been saying many cheerful things like that, said Pippin.
I love Pippin.
Yeah. He's been saying many cheerful things like that. Oh, man.
He thinks I need keeping in order.
He thinks I need keeping in order, but it seems impossible somehow to feel gloomy or depressed in this place. I feel I could sing if I knew the right song for the occasion. I feel like singing myself, said Frodo, or laughed Frodo, though at the moment I feel more like eating and drinking. That will soon be cured, said Pippin. You have shown your usual cunning in getting up just in time for a meal. More than a meal, a feast, said Merry. As soon as Gandalf reported that you were recovered, the preparations began. He had hardly finished speaking.
All things are ready.
Hey.
Come to the feast.
He had hardly finished speaking when they were summoned to the hall by the ringing of many bells. Let's pause right there because I had a couple notes. Gotta find them. Oh, so of course Pippin sticking his foot in his mouth as Pippin is wont to do.
That's Pippin's MO, right, Micah?
Yeah.
Let's see. So not looking toward home. Okay. Now we're at Elrond's table. Enter the hobbits. The hall of Elrond's house was filled with folk, elves for the most part, though there were a few guests of other sorts. Elrond, as was his custom, sat in a great chair at the end of the long table upon the...
Dais. I never knew how to pronounce it. Dais?
That's okay.
Dais?
The daisy?
I think it's a dais.
Dais.
Somebody will correct us. I've never been clear on how to... But I got one in Lotro, and it was huge. I put it in our kinship yard, and I took it down right away because it's ginormous.
Too big.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Okay. A little Lotro lingo there for...
Oh, okay.
Us gamers.
Don't say that ever again, please.
Oh, gosh. Next to him on the one side was Glorfindel, and on the other side sat Gandalf. Frodo looked at them in wonder.
Well, okay, let's pay close attention to what follows.
Yes. For he had never seen Elrond, of whom many tales spoke.
so many tales spoke.
And as they sat upon his right and his left, Glorfindel and even Gandalf, whom he thought he knew so well, were revealed as lords of dignity and power.
Yes.
Of dignity and power. So what do you mean? Like a, almost like a transfiguration? In a sense, not literally.
Yes. And also really, Frodo's really looking at them and really seeing who they are, what they are.
Yeah. Gandalf was shorter in stature than the other two, but his long white hair, his sweeping silver beard, and his broad shoulders made him look like some wise king of ancient legend. In his aged face, under great snowy brows, his dark eyes were set like coals that could leap suddenly into fire.
Huh.
That's pretty cool.
Yes.
Glorfindel was tall and straight. His hair was of shining gold. His face fair and young and fearless and full of joy. His eyes were bright and keen, and his voice like music.
I highlighted this. Oh. Read this slowly and with purpose.
On his brow sat wisdom, and in his hand was strength.
Continue on.
Okay. The face of Elrond was ageless, neither old nor young, though in it was written the memory of many things both glad and sorrowful. His hair was dark as the shadows of twilight, and upon it was set a circlet of silver. His eyes were gray as a clear evening, and in them was a light like the light of stars. Venerable, he seemed as a king crowned with many winters, and yet hale as a tried warrior in the fullness of his strength. He was the Lord of Rivendell, and mighty among both elves and men.
That just gives me the chills. Yeah. Let's talk about this. Yes.
Let's talk about it.
Because this is some fantastic writing. It is regal, and it's majestic, and it is... I mean, Micah, expound on that. What does that make you feel? Reading how Tolkien is describing these figures of renown.
Well, obviously, it gives me an idea of what kind of people they are.
Revealed as lords of dignity and power, right? I love this, that describing Glorfindel, on his brow sat wisdom, and in his hand was strength. These are biblical descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
Tolkien is drawing on, not only is he drawing on literature such as Beowulf and other ancient lore and tales, but he, being a Christian, you know, he says it verbatim, I'm a Christian, which can be deduced by my stories. Or when he says, The Lord of the Rings is a fundamentally religious and Catholic work.
Mm-hmm.
Those are his words. Those are not our words. Yet we know that he, quote, cordially dislikes allegory in all of its manifestations.
Mm-hmm.
So just to make clear, just to reiterate to folks who haven't been around since the beginning of the Secret Fire podcast, we made it clear in our introductory episode that we are not treating this as an allegory to biblical, to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing that. This is not the Chronicles of Narnia. But because he said that it's fundamentally religious and Catholic work, because he said, I am a Christian, which can be deduced by my writings, we are seeing, let me just make this plain, we are seeing the shadows. We are seeing types.
Types and shadows, yes.
That are found in the antitype in Scripture, or at least in part.
When you say antitype, not like against, but before.
Well, you have the type, and it's fulfilled in the antitype. The antitype is set against the type. You have types in antitype.
So like anti-type?
Anti.
Anti as in before.
Yeah. Like this is what it...
Yes, this is the first.
The type points to what?
The original.
The original.
Yes, okay, that's what we're talking
about. Sometimes the original is not seen in its full glory until after. Right?
Hence subplots.
And so this kind of language, on his brow sat wisdom, and in his hand was strength, that was Glorfindel. But, and then the face of Elrond was ageless, neither old or young, though in it was written the memory of many things, both glad and sorrowful. You know, he was the Lord of Rivendell and mighty among the elves. I just put a couple little notes in here that I wanted to share, just a few scriptures that have elements of these in them. See if you can find the shadows and the types and antitypes. Revelation chapter 19, verse 12, out of the NASB, New American Standard Bible. His eyes are a flame of fire, and on his head are many diadems. And he has a name written on him, which no one knows except himself. Verse 16 of Revelation 19. And on his robe and on his thigh he has a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Back Revelation chapter 2, verse 17, Jesus says, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, to him who perseveres, to him who has hope and good faith, make it to, if we make it to the house of Elrond, the tables will be full. He who has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, to him I will give some of the hidden manna, and I will give him a white stone and a new name written on the stone, which no one knows but he who receives it. Chapter 17 of Revelation, verse 14, last one here, talking about, these will wage war against the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them because he is Lord of Lords and King of Kings. And those who are with him are the called and chosen and faithful. A lot of talk in here about names, and those who are called, they have a new name. He has a name written on his thigh, and these names that no one knows except for the called and the chosen, and these types of images. Well, we could go through the whole Bible and find those types of images.
Oh, yeah.
And so when Frodo sees, and he looked at them in wonder, for he had never before seen Elrond, of whom so many tales spoke. And as they sat upon his right hand and on his left, Glorfindel and even Gandalf, whom he thought he knew so well, were revealed as lords of dignity and power. Oh, skipping down to the, again, that description of Glorfindel, tall and straight, his hair was shining gold, his face fair and young and fearless and full of joy. His eyes were bright and keen, and his voice like music. On his brow sat wisdom, and in his hand was strength. And the face of Elrond was ageless, neither old nor young, though in it was written the memory of many things, both glad and sorrowful. That's just what that's the image that came to me when I got to this part. I had read it many times, but this time, for some reason, perhaps it's because we have been talking so much about those encouraging words of Strider. Strider never said, you are going to make it. He's saying, have faith and have hope and persevere, because if we make it to Rivendell, Elrond's tables are full. There's that comfort and that healing and all those wonderful things. So I think it's because we've just been focusing on those that this really leapt out to me this time. This house is, as we discussed on the last episode, is reminiscent of what Jesus encouraged the apostles in the upper room. In my Father's house, there are many dwelling places, and I'm going to prepare a place for you. And just ties together like that. Are you seeing any of that?
Definitely. One thing that I definitely get the impression of is that Frodo, this is Frodo again, the confusion for me, the persona that's telling this, yes, Tolkien wrote it, but who's the persona that's telling the story? And it's Frodo, right? This is Frodo telling this part.
Yeah. I'm sure he recorded this part.
So as Frodo is telling this, he's taking his time and describing this, and I get the sense that he doesn't feel worthy to sit at the table.
Oh,
like
there, yeah.
Like there's a deep sense of humility.
Yes.
As he's approaching this triad of great and noble, regal, majestic characters.
Lords,
yeah. Lords of Middle-earth, really.
Mm-hmm.
And he's definitely got that sense of, again, humility, of, you know, who am I to sit at this table, and yet they're honoring me. And yet they're honoring me and my friends.
I'm in their presence. It really is, to me, it is a shadow. It is a picture of the reign of God, the reign of Jesus, the heaven, the heavenly Jerusalem, the church, a lot of things. So just thought I'd bring those to people's attention.
But Michael, those aren't the only people at the table.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's not just
There's
Gandalf.
There's even more mini meetings?
There are. There's not just Gandalf. There's not just Glorfindel. There's not just Elrond in the middle of the table. Against the woven cloths upon the wall, there was a chair under a canopy, and there sat a fair lady to look upon. And so, like was she in the form of womanhood to Elrond, that Frodo guessed that she was one of his close kindred. Young she was, and yet not so. The braids of her dark hair were touched by no frost. Her white arms and clear face were flawless and smooth, and the light of stars was in her eye, in her bright eyes, gray as a cloudless night. Yet queenly she looked, and thought and knowledge were in her glance, as of one who has known many things that were in the years to. That the years bring. Above her brow, her head was covered with a cap of silver lace, netted with small gems, glittering white, but her soft gray raiment had no ornament save a girdle of leaves and wrought in silver. So it was that Frodo saw her whom few mortals had yet seen, Arwen, daughter of Elrond, in whom it was said that the likeness of Lúthien had come on earth again. And she was called Undomiel?
Undomiel.
For she was the even star of her people. Long she had been in the land of her mother's kin, in Lórien beyond the mountains, but was lately returned to Rivendell to her father's house. Her brothers, Eladon and Elrohir...
Yeah. Elrohir,
were out upon errantry, for they rode often far afield with the rangers of the north, forgetting their mother's torment in the dens of the orcs. Okay, so this is Arwen.
Yes.
This is Liv Tyler.
Tyler's daughter.
By the way, even with that wonderful description of Elrond, I still couldn't displace Hugo Weaving's.
No, yeah. He is Elrond.
That is how it was.
Yes, yes.
So when we got to Arwen here, I'm thinking, okay, Liv Tyler, here we go. So let's talk about this for just a second. Remind me who Lúthien was. I know there's that great parable with Lúthien and whoever.
It's really, it's like, I guess, would be the archetype, right?
Archetype,
yeah.
Sure.
You have Beren and Lúthien.
Beren. And the Beren figure is Strider, and Lúthien is...
Arwen.
Baron is to
Strider. Yes, that's the way to say it.
Yeah, as Lúthien is to Arwen.
Yes.
So
it was the marriage between a mortal man and an elven princess.
Okay. A king.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And she gave up her mortality to be with him.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Undomiel.
Yes.
Evenstar. Tell me about that. Remind me what
Evenstar
is. I think
that we should probably hold off on that.
Oh, okay.
We just met Arwen, and we're going to find many differences because in the films, in Peter Jackson's films, we had already met Arwen.
by this point.
Yes, that because she took the place of Glorfindel.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
Okay.
And so it was nice to have the character in there.
Yeah, they had to develop
her more. Yeah,
in the same way that it was nice that they took out Tom Bombadil, because that wasn't nice.
It just made the the story a little more compact, a little more manageable. Well,
yeah.
Right?
A little more succinct, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay. But now, what's this business about the Mother's Torment? Or should we not?
I think that we should hold off on
that.
That's well.
Okay. Okay.
We can probably get into the history of Elrond's family.
Again, listeners, one more time here on episode number 19. This is Brendan's first time reading through The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And our plans are, once we finish, complete The Lord of the Rings, we will move on to another book from the Legendarium. And so we're wanting Brendan to experience this book like we all experienced it for our first time. Mm-hmm. You know, and questions will arise. But here's the wonderful thing. Whereas in other stories, many questions arise that are never answered. We have the...
Yeah, we'll meet Elrond's sons again later. So
okay.
We can talk about it another time.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, well then moving on then. Pressing...
We may even figure out more stuff in this very chapter. Who knows, Brendan?
Hey.
Yeah.
Such loveliness in a such loveliness in living thing Frodo had never seen before, nor imagined in his mind. And he was both surprised and abashed to find that he had a seat at Elrond's table among these folk so high and fair.
And Undomiel, that's yes. Evanstar.
Oh, that's just the translation. Yeah. Okay.
That's
right.
The Quenya.
Evanstar, not Evanstar.
Evanstar. I don't know.
Okay, what? All right.
I'm not a philologist.
Though he had a suitable chair and was raised upon several cushions, he felt very small and rather out of place, but that feeling quickly passed. The feast was merry, and the food was all his hunger could desire, and it was some time before he looked about him again and even turned to his neighbors. Which one of those neighbors just happens to be Gloin. Next to Frodo on his right sat a dwarf of important appearance, richly dressed, his beard very long and forked, was white, nearly as white as the snow-white cloth of his garments. He wore a silver belt, and around his neck hung a chain of silver and diamonds, and Frodo stopped eating to look at him.
That's my wee lad, Gimli.
Glenn's getting a little old.
He is.
That's my wee lad, Gimli. No, yeah. No, I'm Frodo.
No, stop it.
Oh,
get out of here.
I'm sorry.
Welcome and well met, said the dwarf, turning towards him. Then he actually rose from his seat and bowed. Gloin, at your service, he said, and bowed still lower. Frodo Baggins, at your service and your family's, said Frodo correctly, rising in surprise and scattering his cushions.
Do you remember in The Hobbit, because you have read The Hobbit,
yes,
when these dwarves just start showing up at Bag End, and Bilbo, at first, he responds the proper way.
Yes.
At your service and your family's.
Yes.
But then he gets so flustered that he forgets his manners.
Yeah.
I think it's actually the second time. because he's like, okay, one dwarf, and then a second?
It only took one to fluster him.
Yeah.
So this is a throwback to that.
Okay, I gotcha.
No, this is Hobbit. Well, this is actually Middle Earth manners.
Okay, all right. Am I right in guessing that you are the Gloin, one of the 12 companions of the great Thorin Oakenshield? Quite right, answered the dwarf.
That's what we learned, Gimli.
Quite right, answered the dwarf, gathering up the cushions and courteously assisting Frodo back into his seat. And I do not ask, for I have already been told that you are the kinsman and adopted heir of our friend Bilbo the Renowned. Allow me to congratulate you on your recovery.
Don't you love to hear Gloin say, our friend Bilbo the Renowned?
Mm-hmm.
What's that? What is that? What's that a sign of?
Well, that Gloin loved Bilbo. That the dwarves, especially the company of Thorin Oakenshield, loved Bilbo.
Great love and respect and honor.
Yeah.
Wow.
You have had some strange adventures, I hear, said Gloin. I wonder greatly what brings four hobbits on so long a journey. Nothing like it has happened since Bilbo came with us, but perhaps I should not inquire too closely, since Elrond and Gandalf do not seem disposed to talk of this. I think we will not speak of it, At least not yet, Frodo said politely. He guessed that even in Elrond's house, the matter of the ring was not one for casual talk. And in any case, he wished to forget his troubles for a time. But I am equally curious, he added, to learn what brings so important a dwarf so far from the Lonely Mountain. And Gloin looked at him. If you have not heard, I think we will not speak of that yet either. Master Elrond will summon us all ere long, I believe, and then we shall all hear many things. But there is such a time that may be, but there is much else that may be told. And I had a note about that, so let me find that note.
Yeah, I can't talk to you about that right now. It wouldn't be proper, but I do have some things that I can share with you that you may find of interest.
Okay, so they both have very important things that they want to talk to each other about specifically, but they can't, or they choose not to. It's not that
Isn't it amazing how they feel a kindred for each other, or am I reading into this?
No, they do feel kindred, because through Bilbo.
Bilbo.
Yeah. And they want to share all these things. Gloin unloads a history on Frodo, and then Frodo starts asking about other dwarves in the company, and Balin is the crux, and that's where Gloin says, "Oh, Balin's actually why I'm here," and he can't go into detail, or he chooses not to go into any detail. Gloin began then to talk of the works of his people, telling Frodo about their great labors in Dale, and under the mountain. We have done well, he said, but in metalwork we cannot rival our fathers, many of whose secrets are lost. We make good armor and keen swords, but we cannot again make mail or blade to match those that were made before the dragon came. Only in mining and building have we surpassed the old days. You should see the waterways of Dale, Frodo, and the fountains and the pools. You should see the stone-paved roads of many colors and the halls and cavernous streets under the earth with arches curved like trees and the terraces and towers upon the mountain sides. Then you would see that we have not been idle. I will come to see them, if I ever can, said Frodo. How surprised Bilbo would have been to see all the changes of the desolation of Smaug. And Gloin looked at Frodo and smiled. You were very fond of this Bilbo, weren't you? Were you not? As he asked. Yes, answered Frodo. I would rather see him than all the towers and palaces in the world. I think it's very interesting. Gloin looked at Frodo and smiled, because Gloin knows that Bilbo's there, and he knows that Frodo doesn't.
It's like, and it gives me the impression of like a big surprise party or something.
Yeah,
you know, they all know and they're in on it. But
yeah, the only one that doesn't know is Frodo, because he's been sleeping through it all.
I wonder if that is because he is the ring bearer, and they know that he is under a terrible burden. And he's been wounded significantly, in fact, may we even say mortally wounded by the
Morgul blade.
Morgul blade.
Yeah.
And the love that Frodo has for Bilbo is no secret to anyone.
Right.
And so I like to think that they are all in on this surprise, because it's going to, I wonder if there's what other motives may be involved in this surprise. Is it merely to lift Frodo's spirits? Could it be something that's being orchestrated in the background in order to raise his spirit so high that he will? Well, we'll find out what'll take place. But he has a role to play, and
Frodo has a role to play,
yeah. And it's a huge role, because that burden, he's going to continue carrying that burden. He mm-hmm. is the scapegoat.
Yeah.
And to liken that again to Peter Kraft and his from his lecture, mm-hmm. Christianity in the Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. where he's talking about Frodo as the priest part of that triumvirate, prophet, priest, and king. That burden is great. And Gloin looking at Frodo and smiling, that knowing smile.
Yeah.
Oh, Frodo, just a few more moments. A few more moments. Right?
Wait till we get out of the dining hall.
Yeah.
At length, the feast came to an end. Elrond and Arwen rose and went down the hall, and the company followed them in due order. The doors were thrown open, and they went across a wild path.
It's all psychedelic and stuff.
I know, right?
Man, that's a wild passage.
Man, you know. Never mind. That's
okay.
Bad.
Frodo lives. I'm sorry.
What?
Older folks will know what that is.
Okay. Anyway, they went across a wide passage and through other doors and came into a further hall. In it were no tables, but a bright fire was burning and a great hearth between the carven pillars on either side.
Now, Micah.
Hello.
Hey.
Are you seeing anything different so far from your viewpoint? Where are you right now?
We have tables in here. What is this? I noticed that once he read it. Wait a second.
What's going on? Come on. Come on, Lotro developers. Get those tables out of there. Please.
I think it kind of adds something, though.
I think it breaks the immersion.
Yeah, maybe.
Frodo found himself walking with Gandalf. This is the Hall of Fire. When did Gandalf turn to Sean Connery? This is the Hall of Fire, said the wizard.
Everybody knows that Gandalf is really Ian McKellen.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. here you will hear many songs and tales, if you can keep awake. But except on high days, it usually stands empty and quiet. And people come here who wish for peace and thought. And there is a fire here. And there is always a fire here, all the year round. But there is little other light. Really quick, I think it's interesting how much, in addition to the merriment and the merrymaking and the storytelling and the feasts, in addition to all that stuff going on at this last homely house on the left, on the east, facing the east.
Up the left.
Of the left. Maybe that's why I thought east was left. Because like, I keep...
Yeah, you're a
anyway,
analogy.
Anyway, with all that, everyone always says this is also a great place to sit and think. This is also a nice place to, again, reflect. We've always, you know, even from the beginning of this this portion today, there's that moment of reflection that Frodo has in the mirror. There's that time that Gandalf says right here for sitting and thinking. And especially who we're about to meet, he too will get there. As Elrond entered and went towards the seat prepared for him, elvish minstrels began to make sweet music. Slowly the hall filled, and Frodo looked with delight upon the many fair faces that were gathered together. The golden firelight played upon them and shimmered in their hair, and suddenly he noticed, not far from the other end of the fire, a small dark figure seated on a stool with his back propped against a pillar. Beside him, on the ground, was a drinking cup and some bread, and Frodo wondered whether he was ill, if people were ever ill in Rivendell, and had been unable to come to the feast. His head seemed sunk in sleep on his breast, and a fold of his dark cloak was drawn over his face. Elrond went forward and stood beside the silent figure. "Awake, little master," he said with a smile. And then turning to Frodo, he beckoned to him. "Now at last the hour has come that you have wished for, Frodo," he said. "Here is a friend that you have long missed." The dark figure raised its head and uncovered its face. "Bilbo," cried Frodo with sudden recognition, and he sprang forward. "Hello, Frodo, my lad," said Bilbo. "So you have got here at last. I hope you would manage it. I hoped you would manage it. Well, well, so all this feasting is in your honor, I hear. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. How do you think Frodo feels right now? Weren't you... Why weren't you there? Cried Frodo. Why haven't I been allowed to see you before? Because you were asleep. I have seen a good deal of you. I have sat by your side with Sam each day.
Oh, with Sam. Man. Because Sam with wasn't Sam. Going anywhere.
No.
Well, but, until Gandalf would send him, go away, Sam.
Yeah, go, oh, yeah.
Okay, I'll go look at elves.
Sam, you look tired. You should go get some rest. Okay, I'll go look at some elves. oh, man. Lost. I have sat by your side with Sam each day. But as for the feast, I don't go in for such things now. I had something else to do. What were you doing? Sitting and thinking. Once again, I do a lot of that nowadays, and this is the best place to do it in, as a rule. Wake up indeed, he said, cocking an eye at Elrond.
I love that little exchange. Like, I can see it.
There was a bright twinkle in it, and no sign of sleepiness that Frodo could see. Wake up, I was not asleep, Master Elrond. If you want to know, you have all come out from your feast too soon, and you have disturbed me in the middle of making up a song. I was stuck over a line or two and was thinking about them, but now I don't suppose I shall ever get them right. There'll be such a great deal of singing that the ideas will be driven clean out of my head, and I shall have to get my friend the
Dunedain.
The Dunedain to help me. Where is he? Elrond laughed. He shall be found, he said. Then you two shall go into the corner and finish your task, and we will hear it and judge it before we end our merrymaking. Messengers were sent to find Bilbo's friend, though none knew where he was or why he had not been present at the feast. Meanwhile, Frodo and Bilbo sat side by side, and Sam came quickly and placed himself near them. They talked together in soft voices, oblivious of the mirth and music of the hall about them. And Bilbo had not much to say of himself. When he had left Hobbiton, he had wandered off aimlessly along the road or in the country on either side. But somehow he steered all the time toward Rivendell.
I love that.
He didn't even know where he was going. Then, of course, not all who wander are lost. Of course, that's the theme.
Hey, here. You know what? I mean, he made his way to this house of rest.
Mm-hmm. I got here without much adventure, he said. And after a rest, I went on with the dwarves to Dale, my last journey. I shan't travel again. Old Balin had gone away. And then I came back here. Old Balin had gone away?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And here I have been. I've done this and that. I've written a few. I've written some more of my book, and of course, I make up a few songs. They sing them occasionally just to please me, I think. For of course, they aren't really good enough for Rivendell. I listen and I think. Time doesn't seem to pass here. It just is a remarkable place altogether. I hear all kinds of news from over the mountains and from out of the south, but hardly anything from the Shire. I heard about the ring, of course. Gandalf has been there often. Been here often, thank you. Not that he has told me a great deal. He has become closer than ever these last few years. Say it again.
See, we don't use that term. Because he's meaning that he's shut up. He has kept things to himself. He is holding his cards close to his vest, so to speak.
Yes.
Right?
Talking about Gandalf.
Yeah, being closer than ever. You know, he doesn't mean in proximity. In fact, he means the opposite. Yes. Closed.
Yeah. Closed off, yeah.
Yes.
The Dunedain has told me more. Fancy that ring of mine causing such a disturbance. It's a pity
that... Oh, that ring of mine.
That ring of mine, yeah. Causing such a disturbance. It is a pity that Gandalf did not find out more sooner. I could have brought the ring here myself long ago without much trouble. I have thought several times of going back to Hobbiton for it. Priorities? But I am getting old, and they would not let me. Gandalf and Elrond, I mean. Huh. I wonder why. They seemed to think that the enemy was looking high and low for me, and would make mincemeat of me if he caught me tottering about in the wild. And Gandalf even said, "The ring has passed on, Bilbo. It would do no good for you or to others if you tried to meddle with it again." Odd sort of remark, just like Gandalf. But he said that he was looking after you, so I let things be. And I'm frightfully glad to see you safe and sound. Then he paused and looked at Frodo doubtfully.
Okay.
Let's stop right there.
Okay. Let's remember back to the unexpected party.
Yes.
Or, I'm sorry. Let's recall back to the long expected party.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Chapter one. And what Gandalf had, the showdown that Gandalf and Bilbo had over the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But Gandalf could not take it from him because that would damage him. What had to happen? What did Bilbo have to do with that ring?
He had to let it go.
On his own accord.
Yeah.
Yes. And he did that. And that surprised Gandalf. I mean, Gandalf had hoped that he would, but when he actually did, he said, "Wow, that takes a strength that not many people have." Men certainly didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Gollum didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Bilbo did give it up on his own accord.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, it's very important, not only because, yes, Bilbo, you are a different kind of a breed. You're a different kind of a person, and you see the world quite differently, not in line with the way that you should, because they're going to find you if you go and get that ring. We're not going to let you go. Just not going to let you go. Sorry.
Right.
And besides that, you were the ring finder, and your task is completed.
Mm-hmm.
It has passed on, and now Bilbo, your nephew Frodo, is the ring bearer. Ring bearer. Wow. Yeah, that is that's quite the stuff to think about
mm-hmm.
in this chapter mm-hmm. so far. But
you need say no more. We'd best get a move on. There are still goblins about.
Oh, bother. More mountains?
No, don't you see? The sun is setting in the west, behind the mountains. We're on the other side, to the edge of the land beyond.
You think that's a good place to stop?
I believe so.
So this will be our first three-part chapter?
Now I'm just imagining how long Council of Elrond.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man, yeah.
What did we get out of this part of the chapter, do you think? What can we walk away with? What can listeners walk away with to think about as they're getting ready for next week's episode?
Well, still, there's just this this building of anticipation.
Yeah.
You know, what do Frodo and Gloin want to say to each other? What does Gandalf have to reveal? What does Elrond, what is he going to reveal? Specifically for next week, I think we can look forward to this business with Bilbo and the ring, because it's still...
Yes.
The ring still, even though Bilbo was strong enough to give it away...
Has pull. It still has a magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
How about we getting that glimpse into these elf lords, these kings of men, these lords of men, Elrond and Gandalf and Glorfindel and Arwen. I think that we get a glimpse into, even though now Frodo is in Elrond's house and he's healed by Elrond and Elrond Hubbard, and he is and rest and these things, but I think that that vision, that really seeing these with power in their hands, you know, and these metaphorical descriptions of them, I think it really opens up the story to how big this really is, how
dire
mm-hmm.
situation is. So I like that, where it I think it took it up a couple of levels in this part of the chapter that we read.
Yeah.
I think also, and then to get back down to brass tacks or good old hobbit sense, we are even more seeing Sam's love and devotion
yeah.
and honoring those words of Gildor. Right? Mm-hmm. You don't leave him alone. Sam Gamgee, I won't. It's just neat. I think we learned a lot of neat things. Just, you know, subtle.
Yeah, definitely.
But when you look behind them, they're not so subtle.
Yeah.
And I love that about story.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Not so much action in this chapter still, which I don't think it's going to be. But like you said, a lot of stuff that's under...
Dialogue and exposition.
Subtext.
Yeah.
Very intriguing.
All right. We received no responses to our party invitations last week. So no comments, no voicemail, no email, no reviews. So let me take this opportunity, dear listeners. The reason why we... ask for the reviews, especially 5-star reviews, whether it's on iTunes or whatever they're calling it now, Apple Podcasts, I think, or wherever you're able to leave the reviews, is because that helps people happen upon the content. You know, people that may not even be looking for it. So let's say Secret Fire Podcast in the iTunes store is listed under literature. Well, the literature category is humongous. And people may just be browsing through that, but if we get enough people that are excited about the show and are leaving 5-star reviews, the algorithm, iTunes or wherever, will say, "Oh, hey, you may be interested in the Secret Fire Podcast." And people will say, "Secret Fire Podcast? That sounds fascinating. What's that all about?" Oh, wow! They're going chapter by chapter through the Lord of the Rings. I'm all over it. Now, I do know that oftentimes, because like last week when we read Ron's review, that mm-hmm. was a doozy. You know, yeah. that was a grand review, and that may actually, frighten folk off from leaving a review because, oh, I can't make one as wordy as that, or, you know, I can't. I mean, he already said it all, and I agree with that. Just hit 5 stars, and the first person that leaves a review, 5-star review, that says, "I love this podcast." Period. One sentence. What? How many words is that? 4. "I love this podcast." 4 words and a period at the end. You get a super duper shout out on the Secret Fire Podcast because that's all it takes. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's just a reminder. Again, it does make us feel good. We do like to hear those. But more importantly, it's for discovery. For other people who are not looking for the Secret Fire Podcast. So mm-hmm. just a little reminder.
For people who didn't know they were looking for it.
Yeah, they didn't know, but there are a lot of people looking for it, just don't know it yet. So mm-hmm. help them find it. That's going to be the thing. Anything, Party Tree, what's going on? Anything fun? No, Micah, you're you're going to stage manage tonight.
Yeah, still doing that.
All right. Hey, they brought back the LOTRO Summer Festival.
Yeah, they did.
For a repeat.
For how long?
I don't know. I didn't even look it up. I logged in the day before yesterday, and hello, what's this? The festival? Yes, my favorite thing about...
Probably another week and a half or so.
Yeah, probably a 2-week stay. My favorite thing about Lord of the Rings Online is the festivals. And so anyway, hey, I want to let everybody know that we now have a YouTube channel. So we don't have subscribers, and you have to have a certain amount of subscribers before you can get a vanity URL. So for right now, you'll just have to go to YouTube and search for the Secret Fire Podcast. Mm. And so what we're doing is porting our videos that we record live on Twitch. I just go ahead and import those or export those to our YouTube channel so that we can keep those in perpetuity.
There you go.
Go there and find us on YouTube if you're a YouTube user and subscribe to the Secret Fire Podcast. What are we going to do next week? Are we moving on to another chapter?
Nope.
No. Nope. We're saying we're going to finish many meetings.
How many?
Hopefully this will be the last one.
All right. So, mini meetings, part three. And before we get out of here, finally, let's go ahead and send out those party invitations and see if we can get some people to reply to them. The Secret Fire Podcast is live each Saturday, Lord willing, at about 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time in the GCT Network studio. You can join us for live video and chat on our Twitch page at twitch.tv/secretfirepodcast.
And you can join us on the Arkenstone server and Lord of the Rings Online at lotro.com.
To find out more about the Secret Fire Podcast, as well as our other shows, including Finding Christ in Cinema, Brendan and I are just about to do the next episode after we record this, and the Theonauts, visit our website at gctnetwork.com.
You can send us an email at secretfire@gctnetwork.com. You can call the Hobbit Hotline and leave a voicemail where Fatty Bulger is standing by. I believe he is back in.
I think he's fine.
It's about time, you know.
Yeah.
At 507-407-GCTN. That's 507-407-4286. Now, you can follow us on Twitter and tweet at us at Secret Fire Podcast. At Secret Fire Cast.
Yeah.
There you go. But let's just say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do, and I want to leave a review.
Good. You can do so at iTunes. You can even go to Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatcher and search them all for the Secret Fire Podcast.
Yes, and our theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle-Earth by Brobdignagian Bards. Find out more about them and buy music and all kinds of, cooking utensils. Whatever sure. They have over there at thebards.net. And until next time, we regret to tell you
that this is the end. I'm going away. I'm leaving. Now, goodbye.
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 Bye.
It was tied to a meeting.
It was tied to Evanstar. No, Evanstar.
Evanstar.
Evanstars.
Tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
At gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Fool of a tool.